The following program was previously recorded. We regret we'll be unable to accept your phone calls, but we invite you to participate during the next live broadcast of this program.
The following is a CNY Talk Radio presentation. This is Taps Paramagazine Radio. Taps Paramagazine Radio. Here are your hosts, J.V. Johnson and Aaron Sagers.
Welcome back to our program. I'm J.V. Johnson, along with Aaron Sagers and Stacey Jones, as we continue another venture into things unknown on Taps Paramagazine Radio. We have as a special guest tonight, we've got Travis Walton. Travis, of course, story is best known under the title of Fire in the Sky. That's Travis's book, and also it was released as a movie. Travis spent 5 days under the care, I guess you'd say, Travis, of aliens. And the story, which occurred in 1975, is something that obviously has still left an impression and a very big mark on your life.
Yeah, it's really, affects me in every way. Although I work at it, you know, I try to live a normal life and, keep some balance in my day-to-day living and not let it take over. People come to me with, experiences and sightings and things that they have. I don't shut them out, but I don't seek it out either. So,
Travis, the one thing I noticed, after listening and talking to you, is you've put a very, very great deal of thought and analyzed what happened to you that I really don't think people get. I don't think people understand that this has really consumed you for quite a long time, right?
Yeah, I had to do a lot of thinking about it, And I even went back to work in the woods for a period of time. It was kind of like, you get thrown off the horse, you got to get back on just to, get your head straight about it. So it was a long, hard row to hoe because, there wasn't any kind of support group or really anybody to turn to. Friends and family, of course, were very supportive. But this is not your everyday experience that you help somebody cope with. And it's kind of ironic that is incredibly traumatic and intense as the experience was when it happened, the aftermath, at least cumulatively, probably overshadows the incident itself in terms of trauma, and that's not to say it's all been negative. There's been a lot of very supportive people, and people that see things out there and they say, acknowledge that we're definitely not alone, that there's something to this phenomenon, whatever it is. But it's nothing I would have ever chosen for myself, that's for sure. I was not much of a speaker, I was the kid that didn't want to speak in front of the class in school, so it's been a long process to be able to talk about this to people. But, I've come to realize over time that, along with the burden, there is a certain responsibility to try to make something good come of what happened. That, maybe I could prepare people or help them to understand things in ways that will make for a better world or at least better consequences for things that may happen in the future.
And, I'm curious about the greatest, most positive result or benefit that has come after this. What you consider is the positive things that have happened to you as a result of your experience?
I don't know. I guess it really settled me down. I was a kind of a wild child and kind of a risk taker and, just had a devil-may-care sort of a narrow focus, and that really changed for me. I think it's really broadened my perspective and, trying to make sense of it, and, I wound up doing a lot of philosophizing that hit this end of the whole big picture there that I think it helps me understand a lot more about the whole universe, really.
Sure, sure. And I know we want to talk about the movie and about the experience of making the movie. But first off, I'll ask you, what was the oddest interaction that you've had after the event as a result of this experience? Maybe a fan interaction or a celebrity fan interaction, anything that's really weird that's happened afterwards?
Well, having the opportunity to be on the set and being around all this great big production, big camera booms and all these crowds that are gathered around trying to catch sight of the actors and stuff. And I was asked by one interviewer, how does this affect you? And I told him, well, I have to balance this with the negative, people that see me in a negative way that I'm not, I'm not going to let that skew my self-perception any more than I'm going to let, people's, trying to turn me into a celebrity or something skew me. So I've tried to stay pretty realistic about this, It's an extraordinary event, but that doesn't make me an extraordinary person. There was this one kid that came up, he was getting autographs from the actors and whatnot, and he was eager for an autograph, so he walks up with his pen and paper and says, are you guys anybody? And that was that's the kind of stuff that helps you stay grounded.
Travis, we have a couple email questions that we'll pass on to you here when we come back from the break. You're listening to Taps Paramagazine Radio on CNY Talk Radio.
This is Taps Paramagazine Radio on CNY Talk Radio.
J.V. Johnson here on Taps Paramagazine Radio with our guest this hour. It is Travis Walton. Travis's story is the inspiration for the book Fire in the Sky, also the movie of the same title. And Travis, it's an incredible story. We had invited some listener email questions, and I have one for you if you don't mind. We have a question. I'm sorry. We have a question from Mary from Syracuse, and she asks if the events ever come back to you in your dreams. Does this affect your dreaming? Was her question.
Well, at first, the dreams were mostly nightmares about these creatures, and that was pretty bad. That would wake me up at night. But gradually, those faded. At least, from conscious recall. I'm told that sometimes I'll make fighting sounds in my sleep, but when I wake up, I don't remember the nature of the dream. But more lately, the dreams are little fragments of these human-type beings in the blue uniforms, and not nearly so fearful, mm-hmm. but nothing that really makes any sense, nothing I can use to resolve what was going on there.
Travis, I think the one thing that that people would have a better understanding is how everybody was hooked up to a lie detector and how everybody had passed multiple tests. Can you explain to the listeners, what entails a polygraph, and it's not exactly what's seen on television?
No, it's not, and even in the movie, they it's only a yes or no answer. You can't illustrate your answer. They normally have the each person go through the test questions three or four times. Any test that only uses one pass through cannot possibly determine anything. Even two is considered totally substandard. What they do is they run the exact same question series in the same order, and then they compare them so that if there's any glitch, it just some random physiological response is not going to be mistaken for deception, because you have three or four runs through there, and if it occurs on each and every one, then they know that that's a sign of deception there. So you know, the sheriff, you know, with all this law enforcement theories about murder, may have been motivated to not announce a complete, clear passing for the crew. One of the tests on one of the crew members was initially announced as inconclusive. Although when we got a copy of the police file, the officer that wrote the report said that the test on the 6th was ruled inconclusive, but that he had basically told the truth. And what that meant was that he'd gotten an argument with the examiner, and after two runs through the test, had got up and left the room. But he later was retested by the same examiner using more modern equipment and methods and passed with flying colors. Modern testing, the examiner scores the test and the computer scores it, and those two, you know, correlated very highly too, at the top end of the range of truthfulness. And
I think they're the one thing that I don't think anybody can comprehend is, you know, yes, you had a very traumatic experience, but your friends had a traumatic experience too that just seems to be glossed over a lot of times.
Yeah, they went through a lot, and you know, I got to hand it to them. They stood by. At one point, one of the crew members, the youngest, was offered $10,000 to deny the event had happened. But of course, you know, there was he stands by it to this day, and the bribe was never accepted. This was made by, you know, one of the major attackers of this case and anything similar. And come to find out later that this guy had been investigated by the FBI on several occasions for having revealed top secret information. So it raises, you know, I got a copy of his FBI file here. Somebody sent me recently since he passed away. And it raises the question for me that could some government agency use that as something to hold over his head to say, you know, you're working for us now? Because there was many accusations for many years, long before he ever attacked my case, from many people in the UFO field that he was a disinformation specialist working for the government, just as a propaganda guy on this topic.
Was there any experience where maybe right after you're returned, where people come out of the woodwork and say, you know, watch it, buddy, because if you talk about this, you're going to, you know, open up a whole can of worms here?
Well, yeah. And some of the warnings were from the friendly side, a nurse that encountered a couple that had had a UFO experience, and them disappearing from the hospital, and a guy who was retired CIA, and a similar warning to watch out, should I be returned, who gets a hold of me? But then on the other side was some rather intimidating incidents with a federal criminal investigator who wrote up a confession for the crew boss to sign, and he told him, I'm not signing that, and there's none of that's true. And of course, he couldn't force him to sign it, and he left angry. But basically what he was trying to do was act like there was some irregularity in his government contracting. But we found out after he left town that he'd gone to the sheriff and had obtained the file on the UFO investigation, and so it appears that was his real motivation. Basically, we can make your life miserable if you keep talking about this. But I think they just finally gave up on that because they were too late. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. By the time I was returned, it was worldwide news, and the story was out there, and they're not going to be able to shut people up or make people forget what they found out about. The sheriff asked the searchers, you know, there was like 50 or 60 people involved in the five-day manhunt for me, to keep a lid on the news, but, you know, that many people. It leaked out, and there were crews from Japan and England here in town before I ever was returned.
So, in many ways, the exposure, you believe, is part of what protected you and shielded you.
Yeah, exactly. That being so visible makes it harder for them to intimidate or do something more sinister, like make me have an accident or something.
Now, the one thing I asked you, Travis, is, you stayed in Snowflake. You're still there. And, in a way, I kind of commented to you, do you really think that's a good thing that you stayed, that you've kind of gotten past it and people accept it and have moved on? Or do you think it's kind of perpetuated a little more? How do you feel about that?
I think it probably worked out for the good because, naturally my every move in public is observed a little more keenly by the locals. And they've had an opportunity over time to realize what kind of a person I really am. And so community acceptance has really grown to a great degree over time.
Now, how about your family? How did they fare through all of this?
Well, naturally, they weren't too pleased with a lot of the negative fallout, but they stood by me. And my oldest sister was a manager of a branch, mm-hmm. and it's not the kind of thing you want, to enhance your public image. But they all stood by me, and not anyone in my family. Initially, one of my brothers was with the law enforcement people on the theory that these guys had murdered me. But once I was returned and he'd heard what I had to say about it, he's been a supporter ever since.
Now, I think one of the interesting questions that was asked to you is, physically, as far as your health goes since 1975, do you see a difference now?
Well, I don't know. I try to live pretty healthy, but, I just don't seem to get sick. In all that time, I've never lost a day's work, calling in sick or anything. So certainly hasn't affected my health in a negative way.
Do you think it's kind of affected your health in a positive way, though?
That's possible, but, how could you know for sure? It's a topic I kind of like to avoid because I don't want to be the bug in the jar,
You're listening to Tampa's Paramagazine Radio. We're talking with Travis Walton, and Travis is sharing his experience with alien abduction with us. Travis, I do have another emailed question from a listener, and you may have answered this already, but I'll ask it. It's from Sandy in Utica, and it says, has the experience resulted in problems in your personal life?
Yeah, certainly. I was best friends with the crew boss, but, over time, we just kind of had a falling out. He used to come with me and speak with me at when I would give presentations about this, but he was getting a short shrift from public reaction. A lot of people would make disparaging remarks about the fact that he drove off with the crew rather than trying to rescue me right at that moment. But, I never had a problem with that, although my family was probably critical of him over it. But it never went away, and people would say that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, it definitely kind of contributed to a falling out that I had with him. And so we don't have the same relationship at all. And for the last 10 years or so, he hasn't, come out with me or done anything.
Travis, at what point did you decide to tell your story in the form of the book, which ultimately became the movie? At what point and what was the motivation at that point?
Well, all these false accusations was the motive. And plus, continual requests for interviews. I figured, well, if I just wrote it all out, I could set the record straight without having to go out there and respond to each and every, mixed up retelling of it, trying to stay away from those kind of things. I'd see garbled accounts that really just, you know, not necessarily negative, just things that got all the facts wrong, you know, and just weren't telling what happened. And so a lot of it was just responding to all these skeptic theories. So it took me a while. I did try to stay low and not do interviews, but that wasn't going to work, I could see. So,
right.
Like it or not, I had to respond.
You have time for one more segment with us?
Sure.
All right, awesome. We're going to continue with Travis Walton when we come back. You're listening to Taps Paramagazine Radio on CNY Talk Radio.
Now, more Taps Paramagazine Radio on CNY Talk Radio.
Welcome back to our program. I will remind you that a little later in the program, we've got Lloyd Auerbach joining us. Lloyd is, of course, a ghost hunter and author of the book Ghost Detectives, The Guide to Haunted San Francisco. So we'll welcome him later in the program. But we're continuing a fascinating discussion with Travis Walton. Travis has told us his story in 1975, being abducted by aliens, gone for 5 days. Seemed like minutes to him, or hours anyway. And not only is that an experience that's just amazing to tell, but there's also so many other parts of his life and in the 36 years since that he's had to deal with as a result of that experience.
Yeah, Travis, I got a question for you. If you say that you'd like to see a remake of the movie, what would you like to see different on this?
Well, I think the main departures that they made that I took exception to was the part aboard the craft. The script that I initially saw didn't even have that part. They hadn't resolved what they were going to do there, and it should have been a warning sign. I did write letters, you know, trying to get them to stick to the way things really are in the rest of the story, but that wasn't real well received either. So certain things that they did are understandable. You know, they reduced the number of men on the crew by one. There were actually 7 of us out there. In the movie, there was only 6. I had 2 brothers, Don and Dwayne, and they became one character named Dan. And, you know, the debunkers and the skeptical sheriff and, you know, all those were rolled into one character, fictional character played by James Garner, and who is actually very supportive and friendly in real life. He's a great guy. But he was my nemesis in the movie. But, you know, probably the biggest departure was the way they depicted the aliens. They didn't look like that exactly. And the interior of the craft, rather than being all organic and cluttered, was, you know, very mechanical and clean.
Yeah, I didn't get the whole thing in the movie with, like, the shoes floating around and, you know, you're walking down the hallway and you're seeing just, you know, random stuff. I just didn't even get that.
Yeah, they opted for a horror approach, and I think that overlooks some really important aspects of what this all might mean. So I might have to write the script myself. I'm going to try to get a remake of the movie and tell it more in line with what really happened. All in all, though, you know, I don't want to be too negative about the movie because I think it did have a positive effect as far as letting people understand, you know, what we went through emotionally. If you can just kind of experience it vicariously, it kind of does open up people's attitudes to where they might take a look at the facts more. And the facts are all in the book, and I get into, you know, all the investigation and all the things. You know, I call it the most documented case, and documentation has to mean something. Other people have kind of copied that and put it on their books when there's really no documentation at all. Documentation is things like polygraph tests, psychiatrists' reports, official Forest Service officials, you know, all those kinds of things, medical testing. To me, that's documentation, and I get into that. I also go into, in the book, all the details about the making of the movie and what that was like. Quite an experience. And, you know, it's not all been negative. It was really quite an experience to, you know, see part of your life made into a movie. And, of course, naturally I was concerned about how accurate that would be. But I've also had an opportunity to meet a lot of great people. And so, you know, in coping with anything that happens to you, you know, you really need to kind of try to find the good in it. And in that sense, you know, I guess I have to say that there has been some good. And you got to take with the good with the bad. So,
and you've, I mean, as far as the good, you've been able to travel all around the world. You were mentioning Australia, Germany, United Kingdom. Out of all these places you've traveled to, where do you find the interest is the greatest in your story and also in UFOs?
Well, I think it is a worldwide interest that's growing. And even in the Islamic countries, it used to be less, and that's grown. I think the Internet has a lot to do with it. It seems like it's taken on a whole new life in recent years, and I've been getting emails from every corner of the globe from some really obscure countries. I think where there's a really big upsurge is in the Spanish-speaking countries. But generally, it's just grown over time over the whole world.
And you were just recently with all of us at Phenomenology, which is an, you know, all-encompassing paranormal event. How do you see yourself sort of fitting in with the paranormal community, and what do you think about other aspects of the paranormal community, the ghost hunters, the people that are hunting for Bigfoot? Where do you see yourself? How do you think you fit in, and what do you think?
Well, you know, I was surprised at the number of parallels that there are between, you know, both the experiencers and the investigators. They're confronted with a lot of the same problems. The investigators want to sort out other things that aren't really the object of study. And, you know, dealing with erroneous media perceptions. You know, a lot of the same things, same kinds of... I was surprised at the high degree of care there is in the investigative protocols as far as trying to filter out the good cases from the bad. So that's always a problem in any of these areas of inquiry. But I think it's important, and you know, the way I fit in, I think, is that overall, you know, it's going to help to open up people's thinking to not be so narrow-minded about a lot of things maybe that aren't even related to the paranormal or unusual phenomena at all, just a lot of day-to-day sorts of things, you know, conspiracy theories, what's going on in the world and all that, you know, needs a more critical examination and an open-mindedness that might be lacking in many cases.
I personally have heard so many stories from people that, you know, they might have a UFO sighting and then they also have a lot of ghost encounters. And some people even say that they're kind of connected. Have you had any encounters with ghosts? Have you had any sightings or feelings along those lines?
No, not really. Fortunately.
Yeah, I think you've got your fill for a lifetime.
Yeah.
Travis, have you found that because of your experiences and because of your telling of your experiences that you've become a source or a resource, I guess is the better word, for other folks who may have had similar experiences? Do they come to you for advice?
Yeah, they do, and I'm kind of disappointed that I'm not able to help more, you know. Some people want to know whether they should delve into this, you know, and I tell them, well, you know, you could undergo hypnosis, but you got to decide for yourself whether knowing is going to make things better in your life or will add to problems, you know.
And have you heard stories from other folks that are similar enough to yours that you feel as though there's a connection or there's a real parallel?
Yeah, there's definitely other good cases out there, but there's also a lot of nonsense, and I've got a pretty good feel for which is which. Mm-hmm. Although I've made a determination not to ever, you know, try to point out which is good and which isn't publicly, because, you know, my greatest complaint was that people were passing judgment on my case without having any of the facts at all. You know, they would get out there and make all sorts of pronouncements when there was plenty of data to the contrary that they could have used if they'd have just done their homework.
Can you share, and without names or any opinion, but just share an experience that was told to you that struck you?
Some of them aren't really all that famous, you know. It just I kind of can judge really by the person and the way they're relating it to me and the circumstances, and it's just kind of second nature, you know. There are times when I feel that the person truly believes that they had something, but I can tell it's just not of the same nature as what I went through.
So no stories stick out in your mind as particularly fantastic that you think you should share or you could share with us right now?
Well,
other than yours, of course,
they might be recognized and, you know.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm going to stick with the idea of not, sorting them out, because I said in my book, quoted Emerson, condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. So, you know, for me to pass judgment on a case, I'd have to investigate it, and I just don't want to get into it that deep.
Sure.
Well, you have covered a lot of ground in the media, I remember in your presentation, you know, you showed some clips from all the interviews that you've done, you know, Geraldo, Larry King, and there's a lot of them. Do you find that when you're talking to these people in the public spotlight that they are typically supportive or that they don't typically believe your story?
Well, I've gotten both from celebrities. There was one famous TV star who just refused to follow my segment on the show. He demanded that the order be rearranged where I followed him rather than vice versa. And he didn't even want to sit in the green room with me. But then on the other hand, there's been some very supportive people who have made comments, like Leonard Nimoy. I did an interview with him for a program, and then years later he was asked about the topic in general, and he brought up my case as being something that made him, believe in the possibility of this phenomenon. And there's been a number of celebrities. Dan Aykroyd brings me up quite a bit when he's out speaking on this topic. He's also an investigator. He's associated with MUFON, so it's both sides in the UFO in the celebrity field. Recently, there's a book come out about rock stars who have all had UFO experiences. Tommy Hager being one of the ones who was on Jay Leno the other night talking about it.
Yeah,
but there's Coast to Coast devoted an entire segment to the subject too. So I think a lot of celebrities are feeling a little more confident about speaking out about things. I was on a show once with an actor who appeared with him twice. The first time he denied ever having had an experience of that nature, and then later was willing to talk about a major sighting that he'd had. So I guess, maybe he saw that maybe it was something that was safe to talk about.
Travis, we're just about out of time, and we appreciate you spending so much time with us today. It's very, very interesting and fascinating in many respects. I'd like to give you just a second. If people have interest and want to find out more about how to get your book or want to find out where you might be speaking, where they can come and hear your story firsthand, how would they do that?
Well, the only place to get the book is from me. My website is traviswalton.com, and there's information about ordering it there. Or you can get it from me in person at one of my talks. I'll be at Eureka Springs, Arkansas, here this month, the 8th through the 11th. And then I'll be speaking at the Phoenix MUFON on the 16th. And then I'll be speaking at Niagara County Community College in upstate New York on the 19th. So a lot of stuff coming up. Early June, Joshua Tree in California, and then later in the month, maybe Brazil. There's an international.
And all that information is updated regularly on your website?
Well, it's supposed to be. I get it updated, but there's a lot of that in there. Like for instance, the cancellation of the Switzerland conference. I need to correct that. But I'll be at Roswell this 4th of July too. Ohio MUFON on the 16th of July. Well, so I'll be out and around. So I need to get that website schedule updated.
Well, terrific. Travis, we, again, appreciate you joining us.
Thank
and
you,
I hope you'll agree to come back at some date down the road. And I'm looking forward to catching your lecture again at some point.
Yeah, thank you, Travis.
Thanks so much, Travis.
Sure thing. Great interview, JB.
Thanks very much. You're listening to TAPS Paramagazine Radio on CNY Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
This is TAPS Paramagazine Radio. TAPS Paramagazine Radio. On CNY Talk Radio.
Welcome back to our program. J.V. Johnson here along with Aaron Sagers and Stacey Jones. Our telephone number for live segments is 315. You just want to write it down so you have it on hand. 315-421-9325. We also take emailed questions or comments. We'd love to hear from you. The email address is radio@tapsparamag.com. That's radio@tapsparamag.com. And I can't think of too many interviews or too many discussions that I've had in my professional life that equal to the experience and the discussion we just had with Travis Walton. In 5 days, he can't account for. He knows about of 15 minutes of that 5 days where he awoke on an alien spacecraft, really doesn't know what happened other than he approached a craft, was struck by some type of force, and was rendered unconscious, and then 5 days later appeared 45 miles away.
Yeah, one thing that Travis didn't talk about was when they re-interviewed the six people that had witnessed this, they said actually that he was kind of shot more like 20, 25 feet, and that how he landed, they really concluded by just how he landed that he didn't live through that because he kind of landed on his neck and his shoulder. And they said just by what they witnessed, they said they just couldn't even fathom the fact that he was still alive at that point. And, you know, I think the implications is that, you know, Travis has got the right idea that it was an act of compassion. I don't think it was meant to happen. I think that they just kind of brought him on and said, okay, we did a big mistake here and we need to fix this.
Well, the amount of thought that he has put into this is phenomenal. I mean, and I guess you have to, because when you have that experience, you have to figure out a way to process it. But, you know, thinking about why, the whys and how of what they did, and then over time, just, you know, he's just constantly thinking about this.
Yeah, he's a brilliant man. You know, if you read the book, it starts out the book where in the state of Arizona, to practice midwifery, you had to, you know, take a test. And at that time, you didn't have to take any kind of a certification. And Travis actually just read the book once and passed it with the second highest test score ever. The man's very, very smart, you know, and I think this is his process was, you know, to analyze everything from A to Z so he can live with it.
Yeah. The thing that that really cracks me up, though, about Travis is when you talk to him, he says, you know, before this happened, I was a bit of a wild child. I was a bit of a crazy kid. And pardon the pun, but like light years away from the kind of man he is now, who is very reserved, very, you know,
stoic.
Laid back, stoic. Yeah,
yes.
You know, and a pleasure to talk to.
Well, one of the things that during the break we were just discussing that it seems to be there's a marked increase in the number of people coming forward, particularly celebrities, and their UFO stories, their sightings, or in some cases, abduction stories.
You know, I can remember growing up as a kid, you know, it was very rarely that you ever got any kind of a report that a celebrity was having any kind of a paranormal experience. I think the earliest one I remember is Elka Summers talking about the house that she lived in California and how that house is haunted, but Nobody else ever stepped forward and said, you know, hey, I had this experience.
Is this the new celebrity PR career move?
Yeah,
like celebrity weddings used to be. Now it's your celebrity paranormal experience.
I mean, no doubt about it. It's something interesting to talk about, and it's a good way to sell books and sell your new movie or whatever it may be. But I don't think that necessarily means these experiences are not real. It may simply be that it's a little more accepted to talk about it.
And it's what I think it's more widespread than we ever believed it ever could be.
So with Travis, he obviously is speaking, showing up at events and promoting his book and his experience and talking. And when you look into his eyes and you have the conversation and you listen to his story, is there any doubt in your mind?
Not for me. I mean, I saw the man's presentation, and there is an enormous amount of emotion that's coming out of him. I believe Travis.
Yeah, I had lunch with him, and we had asked about his relationship with his friend Mike, and he got a very hurt look in his eye, and you know he didn't want to talk about it, but he felt compelled to explain what happened, and that was a real emotion. There wasn't any doubt whatsoever that this man had this experience.
Yeah.
And his website is travis-walton.com. There's actually a quite lengthy excerpt from the book in there and a real detailed telling of his story.
An absolutely amazing man.
You're listening to Taps Paramagazine Radio on CNY Talk Radio. I'm your host, J.V. Johnson, along with Aaron Sagers and Stacey Jones. Our telephone number is 315-421-9325. Our email address is radio@tapsparamag.com. That's radio@tapsparamag.com. We'll be back after the break.